Unfortunately, he did not get the cup. His pregnant wife did. Anchorette's shoulders slumped. The poison, she swallowed, trying to master her emotions, was subtle. Even I didn't realize what had happened until it was too late. It brought on her contractions early. I was trained as a midwife, but I could not save the child. Or the mother. My mistress died in my arms. Her eyes were haunted, her mouth grim. Owen had always wondered why Anchorette was so sad. Perhaps this was the reason. Lord Dunsworth was devastated. I returned to my family to grieve. I could not bear to tell the king how I had failed him, but I told the queen. She promised to protect me. It was to protect her children and their rights that I had been commanded to act as I did. She sighed deeply, smoothing her skirts. Lord Dunsworth went mad with grief. He sent his officers to arrest me, accusing me of poisoning his wife. Before the king could find out, I was tried and found guilty of murder. I assumed the royal guard would come for me in time, which is why I allowed myself to be arrested. She shook her head sadly. I was tied up in a boat and thrown into a river at the head of a waterfall. She looked from Owen to Evie and back again. Only 1 in 100 can survive such a plunge. It was not the fountain's will for me to die. It broke my neck and much of my body, but I survived. My fate was kept a secret. The queen cared for me herself and helped me to heal, not just my body, but my heart as well. The king charged Lord Dunsworth with treason for executing me on his own authority. He was locked away in a tower here at the palace. They tried to drown him with wine, giving him so much that it would kill him. But he lingered and lingered. She paused again, shuddering. When he did not die, the king ordered me to poison him again. And so I did. Mine was the last face he looked upon in this life. Owen felt so strange and conflicted he didn't know what to say. He only stared at her, trembling slightly. Her voice ghosted from her bowed head. His son, the boy you know as Dunsworth, saw me in the kitchen today. He recognized me because I used to serve his family. He has believed for many years that I was dead, and that his father was put to death because of me. Now you two know a truth that no one else in the realm understands. King Severn doesn't know who I am, nor does Ratcliffe. Not even your grandfather knows the truth, my lady. I still serve my queen in her own prison, but I am not here to poison anyone. I never want to do that to anyone again if there is no need. She raised her sad face to look at the children. Owen's heart ached for her, and as he had done for his mother so many times, he went to her and embraced her, resting his head on her shoulder and patting her in comfort. "Does that mean," Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer said, her voice trembling, "that if the king dies, Dunsworth could rule us?" Anchorette looked at the girl for a long moment before giving a firm nod. "What have we done?" the girl moaned. Owen felt sick to his stomach as well, but his ears picked out a sound he hadn't been expecting, the sound of many boots coming down the hall. Toward them. He felt the thrum on the stone floor. Anchorette saw his look and unsheathed a dagger.
"Ratcliffe is determined to discover the leak. He's been snooping around even more lately, always asking questions, prying for secrets. I can't trust any news I hear from him, for anything he offers has either already been shared with the king or is a trap to ferret me out. I need to learn of something before Ratcliffe does, if the poisoner's plan is to work. The best place for news has always been the sanctuary of Our Lady. I can always tell when an espion is riding toward the palace with something to report. What I need is a poison. Something to stall the rider with stomach cramps, delay his arrival by even an hour. This is so risky. I'm not assigned to the sanctuary anymore. Why am I even considering this?
Dominique Mancini, espion of the palace kitchen. Chapter 26. Feathers.
They're coming,
Owen whispered to Evie. He thought Anchorette would hurry to the secret door, but instead she rushed to the headboard of the bed and plunged her dagger into one of the pillows, ripping the case open. She tossed the pillow to the girl, and a cloud of feathers came trailing out.
Hit him with it,
Anchorette gasped, and Evie needed no more coaxing than that. A plume of white feathers exploded into the room as the ruptured pillow smashed into Owen's chest. A half moment later, another torn pillow was sent spinning at Owen. He caught it, and suddenly the two children were filling the air with goose down as they clubbed each other with the sagging pillowcases. Anchorette ducked to the floor and rolled under the bed as the bedroom door jolted open, and Ratcliffe entered with four soldiers, swords drawn. He started choking on the feather fluff immediately. It was like a blizzard from the north had settled on the room. Giggling uncontrollably, Evie whopped Owen on the side of the head with a well-placed blow. She came at him again, but he held up his featherless pillow hood to block the blow, and then whipped it around to catch her in the face. She gasped with pretend outrage, but her gasp was drowned out by a thundering roar.
"What in the devil is going on?"
Ratcliffe bellowed. Feathers were everywhere, sticking like leaves to Evie's hair, her nightclothes, Owen's tunic. The swirling swarms of feathers started to settle as both children froze in place and stared at the new arrivals. A bit of fluff landed on Elizabeth's lip, and her mouth squirmed as she attempted to blow it off. The face she made was so funny that Owen grunted, trying to suppress a laugh. Ratcliffe stomped on the feathers, his balding head wet with sweat, and the feathers clung to it, making him look completely ridiculous. Evie stared up at him, her jaw quivering with subdued laughter. It only made Ratcliffe angrier.
You think this is amusing, Lady Mortimer? Amusing? I come to hunt down this missing brat, only to discover you both destroying His Majesty's pillows? I ask you!
But she was giggling uncontrollably now, pointing at Ratcliffe's snowy head. Owen felt a twinge of fear, but there was nothing he could do. He couldn't stop laughing either. It only made matters worse that some of the soldiers were trying to smother their smirks and failing.
Out! Out! Ratcliffe shouted. You little scamp, back to your room. I'll report this to Berwick and make you both pick up every single
His scolding was interrupted when a feather went into his mouth just at that very word and started to choke him. One of the soldiers guffawed, and then they were all laughing. Ratcliffe's color went red as a tomato as he roughly grabbed Owen's shoulder and propelled him out of the room, kicking up another plume of feathers. Owen looked back at Evie. She was smiling mischievously, and when their eyes met, she gave him a wink. He winked back at her. Goose down swirled in the room, and Owen felt a pulse of warmth. Anchorette was hidden beneath the bed, safe. Twice in one day. She truly was a clever woman. The next morning, Owen was arranging tiles in the kitchen before breakfast when Evie arrived, later than usual. She wore a dark green gown with a wide, braided girdle paired with her favorite boots, of course. Owen knew she had arrived by the sound of her walking, but also because of what Leona said.
Ah, here's the other guilty one. Bless me, but both of you children were up to wickedness last night. There are evil feathers floating in the air all the way to the throne room, you two. The king will not be pleased. Look at you, lass, you have one stuck in your hair still.
I did it on purpose, she replied without even a hint of remorse. Owen has a white patch in his hair, and now I do as well.
He looked up swiftly and nearly knocked over the tower he was carefully building in his surprise. Leona laughed and shook her head as she continued slaving at the ovens. Evie grabbed two round muffins from the table and wandered over to where Owen was kneeling, her eyes gleaming with the shared secret. When she reached the bench, she set down the muffins and crossed over to him. Owen turned back to his tower, trying to finish it so he could topple it. He noticed the white feather in her hair, just over her left ear. She had done a little braid on that side and stuck the piece of goose down through the upper part of it.
"We were almost caught," Owen whispered conspiratorially.
"I don't think I've ever laughed so hard," she answered with a grin. "I'll never forget Ratcliffe's face. That crown of feathers stuck to his balding head. I still want to laugh when I think on it."
She held her stomach a moment, her smile infectious. Owen added another part of the tower. This was one of the tallest ones he had built, and it was starting to sway, which was a bad sign.
"What did Ratcliffe say after he dragged you out? Did he hurt you?"
Owen shrugged.
"Not really. I think he expected her to be with us."
He placed the next tile delicately and it stayed up.
"When she pulled that dagger," Evie whispered, "I was afraid for just a moment, but what a brilliant idea. I don't mind cleaning up all the feathers. It was worth it."
Her hand snaked over to touch his.
"Thank you for telling me," she whispered. "You are my dearest friend."
He gave her a sideways smile and then prepared to place the final pieces, moving very slowly and with painstaking gentleness as he put them on. He was at it for quite a while when she drew closer behind him and offered him one of the muffins. Then she picked up the other one and nibbled on the edge.
"Pumpkin, my favorite. I love pumpkin muffins and pumpkin soup and pumpkin tarts. Have you had oyster stew before? Oysters are rare, but we have them in the north. Mussels, too. We usually harvest them in the fall. Our cook would make pumpkin muffins, and we'd eat oyster soup in trencher bowls to go with them."
She smiled dreamily as she took another bite from her muffin.
"Are you ready to knock it down?"
"You can," Owen said, backing away from the tower. He set up the final trail of tiles that led to it.
"A kind gentleman," she praised.
After taking another bite of muffin, she set it down on the bench and knelt in front of the tiles, gazing at the structure with admiration.
"Do you know where she lives?"
Owen nodded.
I'll take you there sometime."
Jewel waddled into the kitchen, her expression sour, and she was muttering something about two children in desperate need of a willow switch to their backsides. Leona began repeating the story of their nighttime adventures. It seemed the whole palace had heard about it.
"I wish Jewel would go away. She's fat and she smells like a garderobe. Ugh. I'm going to ask Papa to send her away."
Owen stared at her.
"You mean Grandpapa?"
Her finger paused before it could topple the tile.
"Yes, that's what I meant."
"Do you miss your maman?"
Owen asked gently. She scrunched up her face a little.
"She's still sad. She grew sick of all my talking. I was only trying to help. Grandpapa thought it best if I came with him to the palace. I think she's grateful I'm gone."
She nudged the tile with only enough force for it to start the first wobble, and then the whole structure came shattering down in a rain of tiles. She clapped her hands with wild eagerness, her smile dispelling the shadow that had been there only a moment before.
"I love it when they fall," she breathed.
"There he goes again," Jewel moaned. "Owen, Satchel, and Evie. I tell you, Leona, I cannot keep up with those two. I think I'm going to visit Brad the blacksmith to see if I can borrow some ankle fetters to clap on them."
"She's so rude," Evie whispered, giving Owen a devious look. "We might lock her in the privy, you know."
"We only get in more trouble," Owen said.
Together they started picking up the pieces of tile and stacking them in the box by Owen's leather satchel. It was nearly time for breakfast with the king, and face his scolding for the fate of the pillows.
"Do you like your nickname?" she asked him amidst the cleanup. "I've been meaning to ask you since the cistern. I like it, but if you don't, I won't use it."
He gave her a sincere look.
Owen Satchel?
She nodded vigorously. What did you think I meant? Kiski?
Don't ever call me that. I don't mind if people call me Owen Satchel.
To me, you'll always be Owen Kiskaden. Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer Kiskaden. It sounds very important.
Owen smiled and sighed.
What?
Have you gotten used to Evie yet? He asked.
Only when you say it.
I am the only one who says it. She set her hands down on her lap.
I hate being called Lady Mortimer. That's my mother's name. I'm not the lady of anything right now. I've never had a nickname, though. Until now, I always make people say my whole name.
When I was a baby, my sister called me Ugwin. They still tease me with it.
She giggled at the name. I like it better than Kiski. But people have pet names for each other. When we're older, you can change mine to something like darling or dearest. Do you know what anchoret means? He looked at her in surprise.
No.
She nodded with enthusiasm. It's a northern name. It comes from a different language. Anchoret is how we say it in Ceredigion, but the name comes from the Adabirian name Angered. Let me say it again. Angered. It means much loved one. It's a girl's name. It's so pretty.
She reached out and touched his little white tuft of hair.
Where are the troublemakers? Over there making another mess? Another spill?
It was Berwick's voice, and it was full of wrath.
Get you two over here. By the fountain, what a mess. Come on. You two are thick as thieves. I'm in a fine feather today at the mess you've made.
Owen and Evie glanced at each other, feeling the laughter starting to bubble up inside them at his choice of words. Berwick had a mean scowl on his face. He looked full of thunder.
Come hither, you two,
he grumbled as he towered by the bench. Only then did Owen notice that beyond the anger, he seemed fearful.
Come with me now. We've not a moment to lose.
Their smiles faded.
The news will catch everyone at the palace off guard. It will secure the boy's status as Fountain Blessed for certain. Everyone in the kingdom knows about the Deconia Savili, John Tunmore. He was a member of the Privy Council under King Eridor. The man was born to run the Espeon, but no one dedicated to the Fountain ever can. He is cunning, wise, and cold as winter's ice. King Severin sent him in chains to Brackenbury Dungeon in Westmarch for his complicity in the plot to prevent Severin from becoming king. He was undoubtedly part of the plot that led to Ambion Hill. And now he's been caught by the Espeon. Will Severin execute a man of the fountain by the waters? I wonder.
Dominique Mancini, Espeon of the Palace Kitchen.
Chapter 27 The Eel.
Berwick walked with a slight limp, his face agitated and nervous, his gaze continually glancing back the way they had come.
Move along, you two. Hurry now, he growled.
Owen's heart was racing. Evie looked excited at the opportunity for intrigue. They reached a locked servant's door, and Berwick removed a huge ring of keys that had been flapping on his belt and quickly unlocked it. He gestured for them to enter, but he did not go with them. Owen heard the lock click fast behind them. Anchoret and Mancini awaited them in the room. The fat spy was pacing, his cheeks dripping with sweat. His tunic was stained with huge circles of perspiration at his neck and under his armpits. He wiped his mouth on a kerchief as he gazed in wonderment at the two children.
You brought them here? Mancini whined. If we're all caught together.
Anchoret held up her hand. Berwick is guarding the corridor. He'll rap twice if anyone comes. There is no time for hesitation. What is your message?
Mancini looked flustered, as if he expected intruders at any moment.
One of the Espeon just passed Our Lady,
he said gruffly, chafing his meaty hands.
I recognized the fellow. Gates. Sharp young man. I saw his lathered stallion and realized he'd been riding hard and riding fast. He accepted a muffin, which he shouldn't have because it's made him ill. His innards are exploding down the privy well of the garderobe at the moment.
The message, Anchoret insisted.
Yes, apologies. Ratcliffe caught another one on his hook. A big one. A really big one. The Deconius of Ely.
Tunmore? Anchorette breathed in surprise.
By the look of concern on her face, Owen could tell that she admired the man.
I wonder how he was trapped.
Mancini shrugged, mopping the back of his neck with the rag.
I only know he was caught by the espion abroad. Whatever news Gates has brought, he will share it with Ratcliffe immediately. You only have moments to get this lad in front of the king with another dream.
Anchorette started pacing, her brow furrowed. Evie frowned.
My grandpapa and my papa don't like Tunmore. He committed treason.
Anchorette's gaze turned to her.
You are right, she said softly, gently. He was guilty of treason. Other men paid for theirs with blood, but the Deconius of Ely did not. I'm surprised he allowed himself to be trapped. He was one of the wisest men I ever met. A mentor of mine. She shook her head. What is done. Without knowing the full news, we must not guess at it. Just the news of his capture will be enough. What am I to say, then? Owen asked nervously. There were so many names. He did not understand them, and he wasn't sure he could say them all. Anchorette turned to Mancini. Do you have any suggestions? Mancini looked at her, startled.
I did my part, he complained angrily. This is just the sort of gossip you wanted from me. I had to run from Our Lady. I won't catch my breath for another week.
He groaned and jiggled his joints.
I even tossed a coin into the fountain for good luck, which shows my utter desperation that Gates won't think to connect his violent diarrhea with the muffin I gave him. If he does, I'm a dead man.
You've done well, Dominique,
Anchorette soothed. She stopped pacing and turned quickly.
Owen, do you know what an eel is?
He blinked at her.
They're like snake fishes, Evie chimed in.
Owen nodded but grimaced. I don't like them, he said, shaking his head. They taste funny. Anchorette beamed.
The blessing of talking to the children of nobles. Yes, an eel is like a water snake. This is what you must say, Owen. You were in the kitchen this morning. You heard Leona say she was planning to make eel for the king's dinner. That made you think of eels, and then you felt like you were an eel. An eel that was caught by a fish hook. You struggled against the hook, but you were dragged out of the water. There was a rat with a fishing rod on the shore. You were the eel. Can you remember this, Owen?
Evie frowned.
What does it mean? Oh! Ely, that's the eel!
Anchorette winked at her. Clever girl. There was a firm double knock at the door.
This way, Dominique,
Anchorette said, motioning for him to follow her. Anchorette waved at Owen to go to the door and then slipped through another doorway with Mancini and shut it behind her. Moments later, Berwick had unlocked the door and was standing in the frame, his face dripping sweat.
Look at you two, always getting into mischief. The king's at breakfast, no, don't you know? Come along, come along. I'll be bruised if I get in trouble for you being late.
Owen and Evie marched out and followed him. She squeezed his hand as they walked, but Owen's stomach was indeed wriggling like a hooked eel. Berwick's limp became more pronounced. As they walked, a man turned the corner ahead of them, wearing the badge of the king, the White Boar. When he saw them, his eyes narrowed and his expression changed.
Found 'em,
Berwick said, giving Owen a little jab to his head with his fist.
These two are naught but trouble. Someone younger and more limber needs to watch after them. Gah!
The man did not respond, but after they passed him, he continued down the hall the way they had come. He went straight to the servants' door and rattled the handle, but Berwick had locked it. When they turned the corner out of the man's sight, Berwick offered a puckered sigh of relief. They strode into the great hall where breakfast was already underway. King Severn was making his rounds of the tables, jabbing at his youthful guests, while Ratcliffe stood fidgeting in the corner. When the head of the espion saw them enter, a look of relief quickly passed over his eyes, followed promptly by blazing anger.
Ah,
You've come at last,
the king said with a sardonic look.
Normally one waits on the king, but I see that I must wait on two wayward children. How pleasant of you both to join us.
Pardon, my lord, Berwick said sheepishly. He bowed several times. My pardon, my pardon. These two made a royal mess last night, and I was chiding them.
You were chiding them,
the king interrupted, a wry look in his eye.
I think a piece of white fluff made it all the way down to my bedchamber this morn. But then again, the bit of down may have come from my own pillow.
He chuckled to himself, his face brightening a bit at the mischief. He already knew.
Again, I beg your pardon,
Berwick said, bowing meekly as he slowly retreated. Ratcliffe caught him before he could escape and began snarling in his ear.
Ease off, Ratcliffe,
the king said with a twinge of annoyance.
But their escapades last night do not condone such behavior from the rest of you,
he added, wagging a finger at the other youngsters in the room.
Why so sullen this morning, Lord Dunsworth? Is the fair not to your liking?
Owen's stomach roiled with nerves as the king's attention focused on the older boy, who was sulking from the humiliations of the previous day. His cheeks were ruddy, and he grunted something under his breath. Owen wondered how Lord Horwath had cowed him so much.
Go, Evie whispered in his ear, nudging him.
He would rather have jumped into the cistern again than face the king. Anchorus' words were all jumbling inside his head. Before, she had taught him precisely what to say. They had practiced it several times. There had been time to think on it, to practice it in his head. This was very different. Extremely urgent.
Go,
she insisted, butting him harder. He sighed and started toward the king. A man he didn't recognize came into the hall, looked around a moment, and then started walking toward Ratcliffe and Berwick. There was a queasy look on his face, and one of his gloved hands held his stomach. Owen had the distinct suspicion that this was the man who had just arrived, the one Mancini had poisoned. Time was running out. Owen's stomach began to thicken in his mouth. He glanced back at Evie and saw her eyes boring into his. "You will do this," her look commanded. Her eyes were very green at that moment. Owen took a few more steps, feeling as if all of his bones had become unhinged. He was trembling and fearful. Dunsworth glanced up, saw him, and his face tightened with pent-up anger. It was nearly enough to make Owen lose his resolve.
"What is it, lad?"
the king suddenly asked him, his voice dropping low. He was giving Owen a serious look, as if he were concerned about him. He walked up to him, and Owen hardly noticed his limp. He saw the hand gripping the dagger hilt, loosening it from the scabbard. In his mind he saw a blizzard of white feathers set free by Anchoret's blade. He blinked rapidly, trying to calm himself.
"Are you unwell?"
the king asked, pitching his voice softer. He set a hand on the boy's shoulder, and the sudden weight nearly made his knees buckle. He wanted to flee, to dash away, to find a dark tunnel and curl up and start crying. How could someone so little be asked to do this? His eyes were watering, which was embarrassing. He wasn't crying, they were just watering. He looked up at the king's face, saw the pointed jaw that was so freshly shaved it still gleamed with shiny oil. He had a smell about him, too, a smell of leather and metal. Owen nearly fainted. But he noticed that Evie had come around behind the king so that she could meet Owen's eyes. She willed him to speak, her eyes fierce and determined and utterly fearless. It was like she was pouring her courage into his cup through her look. "Just tell him," she seemed to say.
Do you care for eels?"
Owen didn't know why those words popped out of his mouth. The king looked at him in confusion.
"Do I care for eels?"
Owen nodded.
"Not really,"
the king said.
"Do you fancy them?"
"Not really,"
Owen said, trying to master himself.
"I was in the kitchen this morning.
Leona said she was making eels. The king snorted.
You don't have to eat them if you don't care for them, lad. I thought... Well, never mind.
He lifted his hand away and frowned with disappointment. Owen was losing his nerve and his chance.
When she said that about the eels, he forced himself to continue, I started to feel... strange.
He blinked rapidly. He had the king's attention again.
You did. Like another vision.
He seemed eager, almost hungry, when Owen nodded.
Ratcliffe!
The king barked, gesturing for him to hurry over. Ratcliffe frowned with annoyance and made his way to them. Evie beamed with pride at Owen.
Go on,
the king implored, his voice low and coaxing, his eyes shining with interest.
It was like a dream, except I was awake, Owen said. I was an eel, and there was a hook in my mouth like a fisherman's hook, tugging me out of the water. I was wiggling and trying to get free, but the hook kept pulling. It hurt. And when I came out of the water, it wasn't a fisherman at all. A rat was holding the pole. A grinning rat.
Owen swallowed, feeling relief that he had gotten it out. The king stared at him in confusion.
That is a strange thing, Owen. Peculiar.
He glanced at Ratcliffe for clarification. Ratcliffe shrugged, totally perplexed.
I make no sense of it. The boy doesn't like eels. Not many do. Did you know the second king of Ceredigion died from eating too many eels?
The king's expression hardened.
That was lampreys, you fool.
He turned back to Owen and patted his shoulder.
You don't have to eat them. Have Leona make you a roast capon or another fish that you prefer.
Owen nodded, very hungry now, and grabbed a muffin from the table. It had little seeds in it and reminded him of the one he had eaten while riding into the city for the first time. Evie butted into his shoulder just slightly as she stood next to him by the table. She gazed across the assortment of food, carefully decided, and then chose a pair.
You did it, she whispered, not looking at him.
He wanted to collapse under the table in relief. The king's sharp voice echoed in the hall.
What?
All eyes turned to him. The queasy-looking man Owen had noticed earlier was standing by the king and Ratcliffe. He looked like he had just said something. Then, in unison, the king and Ratcliffe turned and looked at Owen.
I've learned this above all else. You must bind men to you by benefits, or else make sure of them in some other way. Never reduce them to the alternative of having either to destroy you or perish themselves. I fear that Ratcliffe, in his efforts to secure his master's throne, may be risking it all the more. There is never anything more tenuous than peace.
Dominic Mancini, Espion of the Palace Kitchen. Chapter 28. Loyalty. Anchoret had predicted, correctly as it turned out, that the king would immediately assemble his counselors after such a miraculous demonstration of Owen's gift. So when the men started to gather in the king's council chambers, Owen and Anchoret were already poised by the spy hole in the secret door, ready to watch and to listen. She held a finger to her lips, warning him to be absolutely still. But her eyes gleamed with the thrill of bearing silent witness to such a meeting. Owen shifted so his legs wouldn't get too tired as he watched and listened. He recognized some, but not all, of those in attendance, and Anchoret quietly whispered in his ear whenever someone he did not know entered the room. The king had called in Ratcliffe, Horwath, and his chancellor Catesby, along with two religious officials representing the sanctuaries. In the months following his victory at Ambion Hill, he had not yet replenished all of the council seats, Anchoret explained quietly. Owen's father, for example, had not been restored to his previous role and was awaiting his fate in his own lands. The council was small and getting smaller. Some of the council members had seated themselves, but the king was pacing, keen displeasure and more unnameable emotions playing in his eyes.
Everyone is here, Your Grace,
Ratcliffe announced after shutting the door. There was a wary look on his face.
You are wondering why I've summoned you,
Severin said in a low voice. He cast his gaze over the men.
You all look like men who are about to be shoved into the waters. Are you feeling guilty? Did any of you know of this news before it arrived?
There was a moment of awkward silence.
Know of what news, my lord?
Said the man Anchoret had identified as Catesby.
Tell them,
the king said gruffly, waving a hand at Ratcliffe. That directive delivered, he turned away from the council and started to slip his dagger in and out of its sheath. Ratcliffe assumed an authoritative posture and advanced to the head of the table. He planted his palms on the gleaming, waxed surface.
News from Southport. We have John Tunmore in custody.
There were startled gasps around the room. Only Horwath, who was always unflappable, did not react with open shock.
How could he? The knave! Be silent,
the king reprimanded.
Hear the news first before you begin babbling. Go on, Dickon.
Ratcliffe cleared his throat.
He was caught, you may be sure, in the port of Brugia. He was never very far from Ceredigion. A boat was waiting for him in case he needed to escape quickly. A boat paid for by the King of Aquitania, if my suspicions hold true. The Espion used it to smuggle him back here. Facts, Dickon,
the king scolded.
Let's keep to the facts first. Tell them what you found with Tunmore. Yes, my lord.
Of course. Ratcliffe's anger was stirring, but he kept his tone civil.
He had a book on his person. A private history, to be precise. I have it here.
He withdrew a black leather-bound book, small enough to fit in his hand.
Entries, dates, scribblings, musings, lots of nonsense about the fountain, really. But it is clear he was plotting something. He's been in hiding for nearly 2 years and played a complicit role in the attempted usurpation. I believe, we believe, the information in here will implicate many.
He waggled the book.
Only 2 years ago?
Severin said, his voice cold.
I'd forgotten. It feels so much longer than that.
He pushed away from the wall and strode to the table, limping slightly, an angry frown on his mouth.
Yes. 2 years ago, he plotted to murder me, my wife, and my son. My wife is dead. My son is dead. No doubt he wishes to finish what he started when he seduced Bletchley into treason. For all we may suspect, he was likely behind that pretender's claim to my throne as well. Tunmore is an eel. The lad was right about that.
Anchoret, listening keenly, flashed Owen a secret smile.
What lad?
Asked one of the prelates.
The Kiskadam boy. Was there another prophecy?
The king's countenance softened remarkably, and his eyes took on the same shining look Evie's got whenever she talked about the cistern.
Indeed.
Ratcliffe held up his hands.
Let's not be hasty, Your Majesty, in ascribing the boy's powers to anything beyond coincidence or cunning. Twice he's done it,
Severin said.
Twice. The first you could ascribe to coincidence, if a fantastic one. But the second? He knew something before you did.
There were grumbles of concern and interest amongst the counselors, one of them begging to know what had happened. The king silenced them with a wave of his hand.
The boy had another vision,
Severin said, pacing slowly along the table's edge with his hobbled gait.
This was not a dream at night, like before. It was a day vision. He saw an eel caught by a hook. A rat was holding the fishing pole.
He gave Ratcliffe a meaningful look.
And then news arrives that Tunmore, the Deconius of Ely, was caught in Brugia on a hook by the Espion. The lad is blessed, I tell you. He is fountain-blessed with the gift of foresight.
Anchoret smiled and squeezed Owen's hand. He smiled back at her, giddy that her plan was working out so well.
The question I ask you,
the king continued,
is if I have the authority to execute a prelate of the realm, a man purportedly sanctioned by the fountain. This man has been a raw blister on my heel for these many years. Lest we forget, he was the one who helped write up the truce terms with Aquitania 10 years ago. Truce terms that shamed my brother, shamed us all, when Aquitania repudiated them. He was a member of this council 2 years ago.
He tapped his forefinger on the table.
Others more noble than he have paid for their treachery with their lives. Yet he has been immune from the consequences of treason. What say you, council? Do we see if the fountain will pardon this man when we throw him into the river?
One of the lesser nobles raised his hand.
What does the child say?
The king looked at him, confused.
The child's last prediction. You recall it. He said the pine cone fell into the river. In this vision, the hook saved the eel from the river, did it not?
A good point, Rufus, said one of the prelates, seated on his left. It did indeed. It saved the eel from the river.
The king turned to look at Ratcliffe, who had rushed up to him.
My lord,
said the spymaster, hardly able to contain his agitation.
My lord, you cannot look to a boy as your source of knowing the fountain's will. You would risk far too much. It would be a miracle,
the king interrupted softly. The room settled down, but Owen's stomach churned in anticipation.
You don't believe the boy's fountain blessed, Dickon, do you?
I do not.
Ratcliffe responded angrily without a pause. His voice was low and urgent.
I think he's a tool being used to dupe you. My liege, if you hearken to him, she will have you. She will have tricked and deceived you. The woman is alive. I tell you, she is. I didn't know her name until I heard Dunsworth speak it, but he swears he saw her in the kitchen.
The kitchen! Where else does the boy play his silly games but there?
My lord, my friend, you must trust me on this. That woman is the most dangerous person in your realm, even more dangerous than Tunmore. Ask Horwath, even he fears her.
A spasm of worry shot through Owen as he realized they were talking about Anchoret. The euphoria turned into nausea in his stomach.
And what do you say, Steve?
The king asked, turning his attention to the grizzled duke who was lounging in a stuffed chair within view of the spy hole. There was a long moment of silence. He stared at the tabletop and slowly drummed his fingers.
According to the official records, Anchoret Trinewi plunged to her death in a boat. If she lived, your brother never told me, Your Majesty.
Ratcliffe's face twisted with impatience, but the king's attention was wholly focused on the old duke.
But,
Severn prompted.
But,
continued the duke.
I have harbored some suspicions of my own. In the north we throw the condemned off the mountain falls. In all our histories, only the fountain blessed have survived this test. If the queen's poisoner is fountain blessed, as we suspect, perhaps she did not perish in the falls.
He fell silent again, plucking at the gray hairs at the end of his goatee. The king's voice was serious.
Do you believe the boy is fountain-blessed?
Horwath lifted his eyes and nodded once. Ratcliffe scowled. It was his word against the entire council, even Owen could see that, and yet the king still heeded him. The king walked back to the mantel and rested his arm on it.
What do you advise, Dickon?
He asked.
You know that I trust you.
Ratcliffe was at the king's elbow in a moment.
One thing, my lord. One thing that solves all your problems at once.
Anchoret frowned, her expression serious and concerned, and Owen felt his chest tighten. Sometimes their plan felt like a game of wiser, but at moments like this he was reminded that it was not. It was a match of wits that would impact all their lives.
Bring the boy with us when we go to the west to dispense the king's justice at the Assizes. Take the boy away from the palace and all the intrigues here. We need to separate him from those who may be influencing him. If he's fountain-blessed, his powers should work beyond the palace grounds. That would be proof sufficient to satisfy even me.
The king smirked.
And what if he is fountain-blessed, Dickon? Do you know how rare this particular gift is? Not the rarity of being fountain-blessed, but seeing the future.
His eyes glittered with eagerness. He wanted to believe it.
If it's true, this lad will become the greatest noble in Ceredigion. Think of it. You are right to be wary and cautious. But my heart tells me this boy is special. My own power hardly works on him.
Ratcliffe looked like he was about to argue, but he changed his tack.
My lord, then my plan will only help you decide if he is legitimate. This news from Tunmore is an opportunity in disguise. I believe I have a way of testing the loyalty of the boy and his parents. I must arrange something first, but we will know the truth of things once my plan is in motion.
He smiled, a great wolf's smile.
Believe me, my lord. I would like nothing better than to have a fountain blessed who can see the future among us, even if he's a Kiskadan. I hope you are right and my concerns prove false.
He's a wily one, my lord, said Catesby with approval.
You picked the right man to lead the Espeon,
concurred another man Owen couldn't see. The king looked satisfied.
What is your plan, Dickon?
The spymaster smirked.
It would be best, of course, if no one knew of it except myself. But let's just say that the boy will soon be seeing his old home of Tatton Hall again.
Anchorette's frown did not leave her face as the councilman trailed out of the room. She slowly and gently secured the spyhole and then rested her hands in her lap, giving Owen a thoughtful look.
"What's going to happen?" he asked her.
She shook her head a moment, trying to find words that would not alarm him. He could read her clearly, and her need to comfort him made him worry even more.
"When a man feels threatened," Anchorette said in a voice as quiet as feathers, "he is apt to do terrible things."
She shook her head.
"I don't think the king has noticed that his spymaster is no longer serving his interests."
Men rise from one ambition to another. If there ever was a man born to lead the Espeon, it was John Tunmore. I'm frankly startled that Ratcliffe managed to capture him. The rat has a gift. His book would be priceless. I wonder if there is anything in it that incriminates me.
Dominique Mancini, Espeon of the Palace Kitchen.
Chapter 29. Deep Fathoms. In the months Owen had spent at King Fountain, the season should have started turning to autumn, but instead it decided to retreat back to summer. The day the eel was smuggled back into Ceredigion, a heat wave struck the kingdom and turned the castle into a brick oven. It lasted for days. Sweat dripped down Owen's nose as he lay on the kitchen floor, fidgeting with the tiles. He had stacked a row up on the bench so that they would fall and instigate a group down lower to collapse as well. His designs were getting more and more complicated.
"It is so hot,"
Evie complained, scooting away from him, her back to the wall. She stretched and yawned lazily.
"It is never this hot in the north, Owen. Even this late in the year, there is still ice up on the mountains. Did you know there are ice caves up there? Huge ice caves. I have not seen them yet. Papa said I was too young to climb up to them."
"Mm-hmm," Owen mumbled distractedly. The salty sweat stung his eyes, and he wiped it away furiously. He hated being so hot and irritable. The windows of the kitchen were fully open, but it did not help against the sweltering heat. Leona was still responsible for baking bread for all the meals, and after hours of standing in front of the boiling ovens, she was snapping at her underlings impatiently. Everyone was upset and short-tempered.
"I wish the king would take us with him when the court moves. It's moving west, I hear. Grandpapa told me.
Would you like to see Tadden Hall again? What is your manner like? Would you like Grandpapa to give a message to your family for you?
Owen stared at her, his heart suddenly clenching. Why is the king going west? He felt a prickle of apprehension. Had this Deconius of Ely somehow compromised his parents? Worry began to wriggle in his stomach.
The king always travels, silly. He must administer justice and order throughout the realm. There are always disputes that need resolution, laws to be enforced, taxes to be collected, of course. He usually picks a place for his winter court. It takes several months to make all the arrangements, you know. I hear he's going west this year. Maybe he'll spend winter court at Tadden Hall, or perhaps the Royal Palace Beestone.
Owen was not sure how he should feel about that. It had been months since he'd seen his family. He was still upset with his parents for abandoning him, whether they'd had a choice or not. But his life had drastically changed in the months since he'd left home. He no longer felt like the same boy he'd been.
I have an idea, Evie whispered. It's so hot. Let's go jump into the cistern again.
The idea was absolutely wonderful, and Owen grinned his agreement. He toppled the lead tile, and they watched the pieces collapse in a dazzling explosion of sound, loud enough to awake Mancini, who had been snoring in a chair. Then Evie grabbed Owen's hand, and the two started across the kitchen, running.
"Where are you off to now?"
Leona asked over her shoulder. Jewel was suffering with gout from the heat wave and had asked the cook to watch them that afternoon.
"To dance in the fountain!"
Evie yelled back mischievously.
"That's not proper, young lady!"
Leona hollered. But the two children were both too eager to care about propriety. Owen felt a little twinge of nervousness about jumping into the cistern again, but not only did the cool water sound inviting on such a humid day, he also remembered seeing the treasure, and he wanted to see if he had been imagining it. The chair squeaked as Mancini got up and started after them.
"Hold on, you two,"
he said curtly.
"Run,"
Evie whispered, tugging hard on Owen's hand. And the two escaped out the kitchen door and started down the hall, the fat espion shouting after them. Owen felt laughter bubble up inside him and spill out his mouth. They ran through the halls, nearly colliding with sweaty servants who glowered at them in annoyance. The race only added to their excitement as they went one way and then another, their feet pounding on the polished tiles of the Immaculate Palace. Their pace slowed when they reached the rarely used corridors where the window leading to the cistern yard was concealed. They were listening for sounds of pursuit, and, hearing none, they approached the familiar tapestry. Evie glanced back one more time, and then pushed aside the fabric of the tapestry and shoved at the window, raising it. After helping her scramble up, Owen followed her through the opening. The sun was beating down on the yard, the heat shimmering on the hot stones. Owen and Evie quickly traipsed to the huge gullet of the cistern and peered down inside. Given the brightness of the light, they couldn't see very well down the shaft. They heard the water lapping against the columns below, but the markers identifying the depth of the cistern were masked by the glare. Evie scratched her head, squinting.
"Let's make sure it's still deep enough."
They walked over to the ivy-covered door they had found last time, but when Owen stooped to trip the latch, he found it was already ajar. Had they not closed it last time? He couldn't remember. They pulled the door open and started to descend the steps to the water's edge.
"It's lower than it was," she murmured. "It's down several notches, see?"
"Where's the boat?" Owen asked. He'd noticed immediately that it was missing. She whirled and looked to where it had been.
"I don't see it. Is someone down here, do you think?"
"Shh," Owen said, holding a finger up to his lips. He listened for any sound of trouble, anything out of the ordinary. There was nothing, and the only sight ahead of them was the empty water of the cistern brightened by the pillar of light from above. Who could have taken the boat?
"I think it's deep enough,"
Evie said after a while, growing impatient. She started back up the steps.
"Wait!"
he called, running after her. He wanted to figure out the answers to his questions before they risked a jump, but he could tell she was eager to start swimming. They reached the large hole looming above the cistern. The water was indeed lower, and Owen could see their shadows shimmering on the choppy surface.
Ready?
She asked, reaching out and clasping his hand. Owen nodded and let her count.
Go!
She said, tugging on his hand and pulling him with her. The wild, frenzied feeling of plummeting reminded him partway down that he should be terrified, but then the shock of cold water met his face, and he plunged into the depths. His feet touched the bottom of the cistern, his hand still gripped hers. Owen opened his eyes and found himself surrounded by a pile of treasure. He felt a huge burst of excitement in his ribs as he stared at the sword hilts, the jewels, and the necklaces. Evie was tugging at his hand and trying to swim up, but he pulled back, not wanting to lose sight of the treasure. There was so much. But then he noticed something awry. There was a gap in the treasure, as if someone had dragged a rake through it. No, that wasn't it. One of the chests appeared to have been dragged back toward the stairs. The dragging motion had cleared a path through the bounty and knocked other bits over. His companion was yanking hard on his hand now, and when he looked up, he saw bubbles were coming out of her mouth, obscuring her face. Owen wanted to stay down and figure out what had happened to the treasure, but they both needed to breathe. He pushed with his legs, and they started toward the surface. As they moved through the water, a loud grinding noise filled his water-soaked ears. When Owen's face broke the surface, he gulped in a chest full of air to stop his lungs from burning. Evie was spluttering and paddling on the waters.
"Owen, did you hear that noise?"
Owen looked and saw they were farther away from the stairs. In fact, they were gliding away from it at a fast pace.
"What's wrong?"
Owen asked, kicking around. The water was tugging them deeper into the dark cistern.
"Swim!"
she shouted, and started paddling her arms and kicking with her legs. Owen began to swim as well, trying to reach the safety of the stairs, but the current was too strong. They were being sucked deep into the throat of the cistern. Fear made him forget the treasure he had seen down below. There was light coming from the far end. He hadn't seen that before. Was there an opening in the cistern? Then he heard the sound of rushing water, the sound of a waterfall.
"Owen!"
Evie shrieked, realizing it at the same time he did. The cistern was draining into the river. The stairs were far away now, and the shaft of light from the opening was a pale spear in the darkness that was growing larger as the current pushed them farther and farther from safety.
"Grab a column!" she shouted.
She reached for the nearest one, but her fingers slipped on the wet stone. Owen tried to grab one too, and his fingers managed to stick. He grabbed Evie's wrist and clung to her, but the force of the waters pulled him away from the column, and they were both swept into the current once more. The maw of the opening loomed closer, and they could hear the water spilling over its edge. Would they be able to stop themselves from going over? He didn't think so, not with how fast the water was moving them.
"Owen!"
she said desperately, grabbing his waist in terror. There was nothing to hold on to. There was nothing to grab. The boat was gone. His mind whirled frantically, but then, with the shushing sounds of the water, he felt a stab of peacefulness. His mind opened to the possibilities, quick as lightning. He needed something heavy, something so heavy the waters couldn't move it. The treasure.
"Hold on to me!"
he shouted at her fear-stricken face.
"Hold tight!"
Instead of swimming against the current, he swam with it and went down. Flailing, his foot struck against something hard on the bottom. It was too dark to see, but he felt with his hands and discovered a handhold, the rung on a chest. He grabbed it tightly with one hand and felt himself slipping, so he grabbed it with both. Evie clung to his belt, holding on for dear life. He was running out of air, but at least they weren't moving. The chest was saving them from being swept away. Why was there treasure on the floor? Who had left it there? How had someone dragged one of the chests away? Why? His lungs burned painfully. He wanted so badly to breathe. He felt Evie's hands slipping away. He needed to act quickly if he were to save them both. He pulled on the ring and dragged himself over the chest so that he could plant his feet on either side of it. The chest was big, probably up to his waist. It slid a little on the ground when he jostled it, but it was too heavy to be dragged away.
Breathe.
The thought came to his mind, and he started to panic,